I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien Podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. In many ways, this week's episode is back to the classic focus that we started this podcast with many years ago, which is the core location technology, the beacon technology that helps us figure out where people are and can be the trigger to so many compelling user experiences. Now, I'm going to be talking to the CEO of Indoor Atlas, Eric Peel. He and his company are real veterans of this space. Indoor Atlas has a highly original approach to location, which was started over a decade ago, which is when I first came across them. And they've been on my list of companies to interview since this show started. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce this particular episode.
The Mr. Beacon Ambient IoT podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, bringing intelligence to every single thing.
So, Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Steve.
So, Indoor Atlas has been, I have this sort of mental list of all of the companies that I want to speak to, and this podcast really started off as focusing very much on the technology of indoor location. Your company has always been one of the most interesting companies in this space. You pioneered a really innovative set of technologies. You've got some interesting patents. So I'm pleased to get into it. I think the first time I met someone from your company, got to have been 10 years ago, and you can tell me if I'm imagining it or go into the history of your company, but I think it was 10 years ago, and I was in San Diego, and we were walking around a Staples, and there were no Bluetooth beacons, and the guy that I was talking to, one of your colleagues from the very early days, was showing me this dot moving around, and it was based on the magnetism of the building and the earth. I just thought it was like magic. And I've always been fascinated. And I think since then you've the solution's matured and you have this cocktail, a fusion of lots of different sensors. So I'm really keen to understand more, see how you've progressed as a company. Indoor Atlas has been around for a long time. So we want to know the secret sauce and where you're seeing the money is to be made and the areas to avoid. So I think we can learn a lot from you. maybe we should start off where, you know, I've given you my observations about your company, but tell me, what is your elevator pitch when you're introducing Indoor Atlas to people? How do you do it?
Oh, yeah. So from an elevator pitch standpoint, so, well, what we do is that we are a indoor positioning technology company. The aim of the company has always to be able to produce an experience that's similar to what you get outdoors with GPS, but indoors, and do so with minimal infrastructure. And indeed, like you mentioned, one of the recipes on how this has been achieved is actually the geomagnetic positioning, as we call it. And I think that, well, I'm not sure if this is anymore really in the space of the elevator pitch, but just to remind back to the historical background you mentioned. So the company has been founded in 2012 in Finland. And I joined at the beginning of 2017 as the CEO. So I don't know firsthand information from the very beginning. I have heard a lot of very cool war stories. The one that you alluded to, the Staples visit, might have been one of those.
Yeah.
The value promise that we had early on was that you don't need any infrastructure. So you can just install our software onto your smartphone after doing the site survey. And then you as a customer can experience the indoor positioning in virtually any venue. And that was the beginning. And that was, and still is, by the way, a great value proposition. Things have become a little bit more difficult from the value proposition perspective since at one point in time, what happened was that Apple made the decision of preventing applications from doing Wi-Fi scans. And what that means is that on iOS devices, you can't do those anymore. So you can't observe the infrastructure that happens to exist on a given location ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But rather, what tends to happen these days is that you would, at least when deploying our system, put in what we call a supporting beacon infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So the positioning is not based on beacon positioning, but we do use beacons. So the way we kind of split this into two phases is that there's a first phase, which we call the first fix calculation, first fix estimation, and that's done with radio positioning algorithms, since they are the ones who are able to, or which are able to compute the location estimate immediately. And what follows then is that when you start to move around, we are able to observe the environment with all the sensors on the smartphone, including the geomagnetic fields. And that's what is bringing the accuracy into the experience. So the geomagnetic positioning early on has the challenge that the location only effectively has one sample in the position where you happen to be. And that's not enough information to be able to tell where you are in a potentially very large building. So over time, when you walk around and there's a path that we are able to compute from the inertial navigation component, which is giving us a relative motion understanding on how you as the user have been moving around. And we are then collecting the geomagnetic fields over the course of the same path. And at a certain point in time, the path information becomes unique or the geomagnetic field variation throughout mm-hmm. your path becomes unique. And that's how the positioning works. So the when we talk about geomagnetic positioning, people oftentimes have a little bit of a hard time understanding that, you know, how is our geomagnetic positioning different from, say, the use of compass. So, and if I try to take a look at the different technologies that are available for indoor positioning, you can see that everybody is using geomagnetism, but typically they are using it in the, or companies are using it for the compass bearing or compass heading information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the compass points to the magnetic north and it's used that way. But what happens kind of behind the scenes is that the magnetometers that you find in modern smartphones, and you have been finding them well already for the said 10 years or more, they are actually accurate enough so that you're able to really capture the three-dimensional geomagnetic field. So And the nice thing about the geomagnetic fields is that it sort of comes pre-installed. So you have the geomagnetic fields everywhere. If you take a plot of land, you will probably find that the geomagnetic field is quite smooth in that, and it's really not having too many features. And it's from an information content standpoint, you know, when walking through the short distances, it's not very interesting. But when you build a building and the building has some metal structures, then the metal structures will interact with the geomagnetic field, therefore creating minute errors or variations. And the way our technology works is that we have two phases. So in the deployment or site survey phase, there's a process that we call fingerprinting, where you need to walk through the area where you want to subsequently do a positioning. And during the fingerprinting phase, we are recording the three-dimensional geomagnetic field in the building. And we are also at the same time recording the radio environment and all the other parameters may be able to use. And then all of that goes into what you like aptly put as a cocktail. So the cocktail is the sensor fusion. So using the inertial navigation, using the geomagnetic information, using whatever radio sensors we can use. We also use the barometer to detect changes in altitude as a relative information source. And then if you use our augmented reality mode, we are also using the camera information for positioning.
Oh, so augmented reality is beyond just an output of showing the a point of interest marker in some kind of a heads-up display. You're actually using it to detect movement, which is smart. It's very good.
Yeah, so there has been a huge investment by the ecosystem providers to provide great AR capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we are using them and using the camera information in general to figure out motion. So it's a way to augment the information that we are able to collect from the gyroscope and accelerometer on a smartphone.
So much to talk about, but one of the things, a bit of a diversion, but your AR feature, this is something that we've been experimenting with at Wiliot as well. And it's pretty awesome, especially for demonstrations, what you can do. I think the question in my mind is how much of use of AR actually goes beyond the demo phase to being used in production. Have you found that customers, are we at the stage where people are really using AR on a regular basis, or is it more something that we as an industry need to use as a sales tool?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we released our AR support, I think it was in 2020 maybe in 2020. So it has been available for quite a while. Of course, the timing kind of coincides with the pandemic as well.
Yeah.
And the pandemic has been difficult for the whole industry. I think it's so our technology is useful typically in large indoor spaces. And of course, during the pandemic, large indoor spaces by definition were either under lockdowns or they were just suffering from the consequences of social distancing and so forth. So it wasn't a great timing to release this feature. I think that, maybe just as a background, so what we wanted to do was to make it easy to combine our positioning technology and AR experiences. We found out that, rather our initial assumption was that people will combine the information that's coming from the AR engines and our global positioning capability indoors, and they will do them. Combine these capabilities themselves and go about building their experiences and applications. But it turned out that it's not so easy, apparently, than for many companies, and rightfully so. So you have to kind of do a pretty good job in combining those two elements together to create a fluid experience. And to answer your question, I think that we still haven't, at least on our side, seen the best use cases of this come out yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's super useful as a demonstration and as a sales tool because it's something that captures everybody's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also easy to understand, that you are seeing where you need to go. You see the path ahead of you, where to go.
Yeah.
So forth. It's highly useful for people who have trouble orienting themselves on a normal two-dimensional or be three-dimensional map for that matter. And from our point of view, since we are a positioning technology company, we are not a digital maps company, and nor do we want to be such a company. So rather we partner with companies that create digital maps. I think it's a much better strategy for our type of a company. So having the AR capability enables us to demonstrate our technology in a useful way, even if you don't have a fancy and, you know, well-designed digital map of the location.
That's really interesting. I wonder, you know, this AR is not standing still. Yeah, we saw one of the biggest announcements from Apple with their Vision Pro. I don't think people are going to be wearing Vision Pros when they walk around Staples yet. So, you know, maybe it'll take 3, 4, 5 years before it gets to something that wouldn't be comical doing that. But it's pretty clear that that's where it's going. And I think, you know, what you pointed out, which, I mean, I have to admit, with maps, I often struggle to orientate myself. So I think it's a really... It's a compelling solution. Are you do you just, so when I looked at your website, I saw the arrows being the directional arrows being overlaid on the path in the aisle of a store. Do you see people doing anything more? Are they highlighting where assets are, or is your view this will just be used to help people like me who aren't very good at reading maps navigate?
Well, we certainly are on our side promoting other ways to use that information. So we, of course, are building these components such as the AR capability on top of the inter-positioning system to be able to add value to the core positioning capability. And if we kind of limit ourselves only to navigation use cases and only, you know, to following a path or following a set of arrows or whatever, you know, the method of abstraction you might have on how you guide somebody through a building, I think it's going to be a missed opportunity. And because of that, we have support for POIs in our content management system. And as attributes to these points of interest, one of the things that you can specify is a graphical representation of an object that can be attached into a location. And we support both two-dimensional bitmaps and three-dimensional objects. And we have, for the three-dimensional objects, for example, we can support rotation and scaling and things like that, so that you can put objects that might be meaningful in your environment there. And these capabilities actually supported in our demonstration software. So we have an application which is available for both iOS and Android. The application is called Inter Atlas Positioning, simply. So,
mm-hmm.
And this application, the primary reason why we created it is to be able to show how the positioning works and to have a simple application that anybody can go and test without having to do any software development. But we have been adding over the years additional capabilities into this application. So we added wayfinding. Wayfinding meant adding points of interest. We have been adding support for geofences, so you can define arbitrary areas in your venue. And when you enter there, you get a notification. When you exit such a thing, you get a notification. And then we have been adding support for augmented reality and these AR objects. So, for example, in your to continue on a retail sort of potential use case in a retail environment, you could put, for example, additional signs that don't appear in the real world, and, you know, here are the sale items, or mm-hmm. you know, here are the items of interest according to your profile, and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I see people wandering around stores with their phones out, but. I think it's just maybe a step too far to get them to be use it to find their way, unless you're really struggling to find that part. So it'll be interesting to see whether any apps really go mainstream with this feature. I thought it was interesting. You described, I think you gave a really nice breakdown of the components of indoor location. I think people come to this and they kind of lump it all in one. And I just want to call those out. So there's like, where am I? Then there's kind of the navigational piece. How do I find my way? And then there was this whole geofencing, which is the ability to actually initiate actions based on where I am. So someone's gone into the wrong place or a place they shouldn't be. Well, there's a ton that I want to get into. I want to talk about asset tracking a little bit more and the different use cases in different industries. But before we go on there, I want to make sure that we really understand the solution, the core technology. And you said another interesting thing, which was we don't do maps. And I think a lot of people would sort of assume, oh, Indoor Atlas does maps. But you're not. You're doing that location. You're doing the wayfinding. You're doing the geofencing. Why not do maps as well?
It's a great question. And I guess it's a question of timing a little bit. So we have been very focused on developing our core technology and the goal core algorithms. And we have been adding more and more sensor modalities into our sensor fusion stack. And since that's the core product, that has been the core priority for the team to work on. And by the time we started to be happy with that functionality, there were already quite a few companies creating digital maps. And there's a lot of value in digital maps. But from our point of view, where we are coming from, it seemed to make much more sense to rather partner with these companies. And that's actually kind of what has also happened. So we have many partner companies who have integrated our positioning SDK into their map platform. And so if you are a company, somebody like Maps People, for example, who is offering digital maps, if you are using their map SDKs and map visualization technologies and things like that, then you can simply enable Indoor Atlas as well. And the Maps People software will be immediately able to use because it's use our positioning because it's pre-integrated into the software on their side. And the same has been done by other companies as well.
So what can you give some examples of the companies that you work with?
Yeah, so we have, if we start from East, so Yahoo Japan is one of actually our shareholders, and Yahoo has an application called Yahoo Maps, and they compete with Google Maps, they compete with Apple Maps with their own Maps application. And their map application is using their maps. They, I think, are partnered with somebody else potentially for part of that. But anyway, they are using our location services. If we then go to Hong Kong, we have a partner company called CherryPix there. They do their own, or they have their own digital maps platform that they deploy. And it has a nice map representation layers. They have also integrated our technology into that. In Europe, if we think about the European companies, there's MazeMap is integrated with our technology. We have WoosMap have done an integration. I think I already mentioned MazeMap. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then on the US side, we have been a long time partner of Locus Labs. Locus Labs has since then been acquired by Acuity Brands, what Locus Labs did and does, or the same team does, is creating digital maps for certain places. Like they have deployments in many airports, for instance, also in the UK. And it's another map platform that we have integrated, or rather they have integrated our technology into. And in Canada, MappedIn has also done this integration, and I'm probably forgetting some of our partners as I go about this list.
Well, that's a good selection. Acuity Brands is a really interesting company. We interviewed the head of Acuity Brands IoT team years ago now, but they're the lighting company, one of the big three lighting companies, and a great source of beacons, sometimes an overwhelming source of beacons with
Yeah,
really honest deployments where they've been like just flooding the whole spectrum with their beacons. But they're a great company, and I think there's a huge potential there because you know, lighting is a staple, and you know, why not use that for IoT? So, getting back to your technology, just a detail of how do you read the Earth's magnetic field? Is it is it just the compass that tells you that that the field is fluctuating? Do you look at the essentially the jitter in the needle of the compass, or how do you do it?
Well, if you think about the compass needle, so the compass needle is some kind of a 2D projection of the Earth's geomagnetic field, or maybe even almost a 1D because it has only one axis of freedom. What we do is that we are using the three-dimensional field, so it's, you know, X, Y, and Z coordinates that we are using for those things. I think that it's actually a good thing that as the CEO, I don't know intimately the technology, so I'm not going to leak any confidential. But the hard part with this is that you have to be able to pick up the good signal from the noise and also compute what is known the bias. So every smartphone has a bias component, which means that it will distort the geomagnetic, the three-dimensional vector in a certain way. And the way it is having this bias is something that also changes over time. So it's not a fixed thing. And if you, for example, in your purse put your smartphone next to metal objects or whatnot, the bias component will change. And it's a kind of a difficult problem to solve. It's one of the areas where we also have filed and been granted patents about how you manage that. So the difficulty with the geomagnetic field is kind of a starting from first of all getting the actual signal out of the noise. Then it comes to the terrain matching algorithms, which are able to match the path over time in the venue. One of the peculiarities of the geomagnetic positioning is that, like I kind of said earlier on, it's not a unique signature in a way that you have. You typically, in any building, will have features that represent themselves in the geomagnetic field the same way in multiple locations. So you need to use other technologies and other components and other smarts to be able to know that, you know, out of those five potentially matching places, the place where we actually are is here.
Yes. So
that's the kind of the, some kind of a high level overview on how it works.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The way I remember it being explained to me 10 years ago, and it's incredible how these metaphors and images that we often use to communicate can just stick in people's mind. But the way it was explained to me was it's a bit like running a credit card through a credit card reader. That generates that. It's important that you can't just stick the credit card in the credit card reader, or at least you can't do that with the old mag stripes. You have to kind of move it through at a velocity for it to work. And that was really helped me get my head around the nature of the technology. But it was also, you know, problematic because if people don't always move. So I guess that's why you have the other, you use the beacons and the GPS to get the initial fix and so forth. But how big a part is that geomagnetic thing? I kind of looked always with interest as you added more sensors over the years, and I was kind of left wondering, well, is it just a clever pivot on their side to something that does work, and the geomagnetic thing is just kind of a little seasoning to kind of differentiate? Or how much of a help is the geomagnetic in figuring out where you are?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a question I sometimes also get from our customers, and it's also one of those questions which is a little bit hard to reply to, because the answer is that it depends.
Yes.
And it depends on many factors, but one of the important factors is that how does the geomagnetic landscape of a building look like? So sometimes you may have a building that doesn't have a lot of features in terms of the geomagnetic landscape. So, and by the way, as an aside, it's interesting to note that the geomagnetic fingerprint on every floor on a multi-story building is different. So it does vary, and it's unique. But if you have a location that has a relatively rich geomagnetic field, so which probably means that the building has sufficient metal structures which are different from each other, you know, pipes and whatnot. Maybe there's metal in the concrete, and different things can happen. Then it actually is the technology that brings the highest level of accuracy in our stack. Mm-hmm. So and especially because we are using it to our advantage to minimize the amount of beacons that one has to deploy.
And that's a benefit. Yeah, I mean, it's so infrastructure or no infrastructure isn't binary. It's like, what's the density of beacons I need? And obviously, the less dense, the better. I mean, significantly better as far as the costs and the friction to getting this in place.
Yes, and we also do still support the model where no beacons are being deployed. So if you have Android devices which are able to do Wi-Fi scans, then you don't necessarily need to deploy beacons, depending on the kind of Wi-Fi infrastructure that you have in place. And then Wi-Fi can take the role of providing the first fix, and then the geomagnetic is bringing the accuracy and the tracking behavior. But to kind of, you know, in an attempt to conclude the answer to that question, it's not mere seasoning, and it's not also, I don't think, a matter of doing a pivot. It's an integral part of the sensor fusion stack that we have. The reason why we have been adding these other modalities in place is that we, of course, want to be able to have a rich positioning stack and be able to operate in different types of environments, taking advantage of the whatever sensors and infrastructure happens to be available. And it's also possible to deploy our technology without using the geomagnetic part, and mm-hmm. it will still work. So we then are relying on the other modalities. But the best performance is gained when you have a good quality fingerprint and are using the full stack.
So, I know this is going to be an it depends answer, but I'm trying to get a sense of how many beacons do you need, given that you have geomagnetic. So if I add geomagnetic and I'm in an environment like a department store or a shopping center that has a fair bit of metal in it, but you know, I really want optimal location positioning, then what's the kind of the density of beacons that you would your teams would typically recommend?
So our typical recommendation perhaps would be to have a beacon at least as a starting point per 200 square meters, something mm-hmm. like that. Depending on the environment, it can be less, it can be more. We have actually added a tool into our web application a while ago called the Beacon Planner. And the Beacon Planner has the capability of providing reference plans for your location. So you put in the floor plan and you draw out the area where you want to perform positioning, and then it will give you a recommendation on how to deploy the beacons there. And it gives you certain options. You can do a dense deployment, medium deployment, or
okay.
In other words, you can vary the amount of beacons you put in place. Normally, it makes sense to be a little bit smart about where you put the beacons. It is also something that kind of depends on your goals. So if the goal is to minimize the amount of beacons, then you might want to choose to put the beacons into some critical points, within the venue from a positioning standpoint. Like for example, you might have a beacon nearby an elevator bank on every floor, so that mm-hmm. the floor detection can operate fast. And you might also want to have a beacon nearby a place where people are likely to start their positioning experience and so forth. So like you said yourself, it depends.
Yeah.
On what you, and one of the things which is kind of interesting, which has happened in the industry, is that the Wi-Fi access points have gained the ability to also operate in the Bluetooth frequency range, and they have embedded BLE capabilities themselves. And that's actually a very good fit to what we do, because then you are kind of having an infrastructure installation to provide Wi-Fi access that has a low density beacon infrastructure to go with it at the same time, which is a good match to our expectations.
Yeah, we've had representatives on from Cisco and Aruba multiple times from both companies, and it's really interesting to see what Cisco's been doing with their spaces, DNA spaces ecosystem. What's your general assessment of the health of the market? You survived you survived COVID as a company, and how did you do that? I can't imagine that anyone was deploying solutions such as yours during the pandemic.
So that actually is an excellent question, and it actually allows us to talk about one topic that we haven't been speaking about yet, which is that one of the capabilities that we have in our stack, or in the workflow rather, is that we have a self-service model. So our approach to the market has always kind of had two spearheads. One of them is to operate through the self-service way, whereby anyone can come in and register as a developer. They gain access to our tools. We provide a free trial license, and that enables you to do a deployment anywhere on the world, on your premises, provided you just meet some prerequisites, which typically are that you need to have physical access to the space so that you can do the site survey. Mm-hmm. You need to have a floor plan that's accurate enough to support that site survey activity, and then you need to have some kind of a radio infrastructure, which typically would be supported by beacons. So those are kind of the elements that you need. So during the pandemic, what that meant was that we were actually able to go on and continue to make new commercial deployments with our partners. We did then what we do now, which is that we provide remote support in case somebody has questions or issues or wants advice on how to go about doing the site survey. The deployments, and actually this is true in general, so most of our deployments have been done by people that are not our employees. So our partners have become skilled at doing the fingerprinting, and we have at the same time trying to make the fingerprinting process as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. So what it means is that during the pandemic, we were able to sign up new customers and make new deployments. And we actually were able to gain some growth even during the pandemic, albeit, it was, of course, slow going.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I think that's really commendable that you've got to the point where your teams don't need to be there. That shows a level of maturity of the product that I think any business in our space should be proud of. I guess it's very valuable for your balance sheet that you don't need to have all of the, you don't need to have a massive field force that's doing everything. How big is the company at this stage? My guess is that it's gone up and down over the years. No one survives as long as you have without some ups and some downs. But how big is Indoor Atlas today?
Yeah, so indeed, yeah, we have had our ups and downs several times over the years. At the moment, I think the configuration that we have is on the small side. So we are, I think, 14 people at the moment. Mm-hmm. We are a little bit scattered around. So we have a couple of guys in Japan, one in China, and the rest of us are here in Finland. That's how we are. And we have deployments at the moment, I think, in 31 countries. So when I say deployments, I mean commercial deployments.
Yeah, and you've got some pretty amazing stats in terms of the active use of your product. I remember seeing on your website. So, but one thing that maybe a tough question, I don't know. When I first found Indoor Atlas, to me, you were just completely unique and you'd got some essential IP. And I think since then, other companies have... are doing similar things in terms of the geomagnetic piece. How do you differentiate yourself against those companies?
Yeah, so the differentiation is really coming from the topics that we have already discussed or the capabilities. So we have the capability of supporting the self-service model. We have yes. proven that the technology can be deployed into very many different types of buildings. So, you know, it can be office spaces, shopping malls, train stations, airports, and, you know, the exhibition centers. I don't know if I already mentioned that, but yeah. So large and small, you know, with corridors, without corridors, large open areas, you know, closed areas. So that has been one key capability. The self-service workflow enables anybody to go and try, so it's easy to take into use and you get a taste on how it is working. Another capability which we haven't discussed so far is the offline capability that we have. So we store the fingerprints that we collect in our cloud, but the engine over the years has been transformed to work in an offline manner, meaning that the positioning algorithms run on the device itself, and we don't require internet connectivity during a positioning session. And what that means is that if you have, if you have a hospital that has multiple buildings and maybe there are some underground tunnels which maybe don't have connectivity or they have intermittent internet connectivity, we are able to support and perform well in that type of environments. And we even have a separate version of the SDK that we provide that we call the offline SDK, which embeds the positioning maps. So that's an interesting capability which gives robustness to solutions that are built around our technology.
Definitely. As whenever I've worked for cloud companies, then that's been the biggest objection. Well, what do you do when there's no cloud? And of course, in Finland, you're no stranger to tunnels, where your company is based. It's one of the things that I kind of makes it an exciting place to visit. You have these cool tunnels that I was never clear whether that was because of the weather or for defense reasons, or maybe it's both. But
yeah, I guess it's both, but it's true that the defense element has been a key component. Since the Second World War, we have been building shelters, and these shelters are, of course, during peacetime, which means hopefully forever, used for other purposes at the moment, for commercials or for exercise halls or whatnot.
Yes. So I love Finland. I was there at the tail end of the pandemic. In fact, that's where I first got COVID. In Finland. That doesn't sound like a compliment. It didn't mean to come out that way. But if you're going to, let me tell you, if you're going to get COVID, then Finland is the place to do it. It was wonderful. I got to walk along by the sea, and the fish soup was amazing. It was really cool. So can't wait to come back. And you know, obviously, as a country, you have the legacy and the current manifestation of Nokia, which has spawned off so much innovation, especially in the wireless space. So what are the use cases that where you operate, and where do you see the momentum? Where are people using this? Because, you know, when I first got interested in beacons, it was, you know, the Apple Store was the shining example of that. And back at Qualcomm, we provided the beacons for the Apple Store, which was like a privilege to see that. And, you know, beacons have become a little bit more quiet, but the need for indoor positioning and navigation hasn't gone away. So where do you see the momentum in your business today? What are the use cases?
Yeah, so what we have been doing over the past several years throughout the pandemic, for example, is that we have been starting to a little bit specialize into different verticals, and also try to understand what are the business needs of different verticals. So one of the issues our kind of a company has is that since the positioning technology is something that you can apply to virtually any business domain, it's such a central piece of any activity, you know, knowing where you are or the devices or whatnot. So even if the technology can be the same for different industries, the way you sell it, the way you productize it, you know, the types of solutions that get created are going to be different. And also, of course, from our perspective, because we don't do solutions, we operate through partners who make the solutions. What it means for us is that we have been gathering a lot of partners in different industries and different fields to be able to serve the different markets. And while doing so, we have also been trying to really gather understanding from the customers of our customers, meaning the partners. So in other words, typically they would be the venues that are deploying the technology for different use cases. And that's really something that is necessary to understand, you know, how somebody is using this technology or wants to use it at an airport. How would you deploy this technology in a retail setting? How do you do, you know, and retail is also a complex space. You have supermarkets, big and small. And then you have shopping malls, you know, how do you go about there? Who is your customer? You know, are you selling to the brands? Are you selling to the venue and so forth? And so it goes. But the use case that most often our technology is used for is still navigation and wayfinding as the enabler of wayfinding and navigation. But increasingly, we are seeing that people are also using our technology for analytics. And we also have done some use cases where our technology is being deployed in an application, but the application doesn't even have the concept of a map. So it's doing the positioning, but the positioning is used for analytics purposes, for example, to enable social distancing or something like that, rather than wayfinding. And the space of analytics, of course, is very rich, and we have been adding gradually capabilities into our own software stack to also support different types of analytics use cases. And we have also ventured a little bit into the space of, or into the area of geo-marketing, so enabling new types of use cases that are really being made possible by the fact that you do have knowledge of the location. And that, of course, is the direction where we as a company want to go, because that kind of brings more value to the core product.
I guess one obvious business question is how does the growing capabilities of the base platforms, the Apple Maps, Google Maps, how does that impinge on your business and impact it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And of course, it's one that's completely beyond our control. So the ecosystem providers have a lot of power, and they can create businesses, they can destroy businesses. But at least so far, what we have seen is that there are a lot of people who want to do cross-platform applications and enable cross-platform capabilities. And at the moment, it's not something that you can get from Apple or that you can get from Google. The other thing is that we want to make sure that you as our customer are in charge of your data. So we're, if you work with us, then you can decide how you want your data to be treated. And we are very open about how that goes in our system.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So there's a tradition on the podcast. Hopefully I mentioned it, but I ask you about three songs that are meaningful to you.
Yeah. Okay. That was a pretty interesting one and took some thinking indeed, because choosing only three is a tough call, but I went with something, yeah.
Well, terrific. Let's get into it. What did you choose?
Yeah, so I was kind of trying to think about songs that are a little bit different and also for me personally representing a little bit different eras in my life and in my career in general.
Yeah.
So I'm a lifelong fan of Rush, as you may know, the Canadian progressive rock band. And from their vast collection of songs, I went with the Red Barchetta, which is from the Moving Pictures album, which probably is one of the most famous albums that they have. And so now, unfortunately, the drummer passed away. I think it was last year or the year before. So yeah. I don't think they will be making tours anymore. But in the last tour that they did play this entire album from start to finish over the course of the tour. Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Yeah.
And you were on the tour. Did you hear it?
Yeah. I was there. So they came to Helsinki. And obviously, when they come here, I'm there. So.
Excellent.
It's kind of how it worked. And the reason why I chose that song was that it's about, I guess it's a little bit about youth, but it's about driving. And I remember, listening to this song just when I got my driver's license. I was driving with my friends, and it would be one of the sort of the de facto songs that we would listen to when practicing to drive.
Very good. That's a great memory. I'm going to have to give that album a listen. I have to confess that I haven't been a Rush fan. Nothing against them. I just, there's so much music to listen to, and I haven't. So I will, based on your enthusiasm. So what's your second song?
Yeah, so the second song is something different. So it's a heavy metal song by band Disturbed, and they have an album and a song called Indestructible. And the reason I chose that was that it was actually a song that I used to listen to when I restarted doing exercise at the gym. So it was always, when I kind of would start a series with weights, then that would be the song that I would be listening to.
That's great.
And gathering the energy. And I actually, at the later stage, I studied a little bit, like, what's the background of this song. And apparently it has been created in support of the U.S. troops in Iraq during the war. So,
oh, very interesting.
And I think it's kind of a fitting also to my sort of small gym exercise things as well.
Very good. And so when did you decide to get back into going to the gym?
This was approximately 20 years ago. So I used to do it during high school time, and I liked it then. And then I, then life got into the way, and I had small kids and everything. But then I got divorced, and as is typical, during the divorce, to come and get a new hobby. So I kind of went with two. So I bought a motorcycle, and I also started to go back to the gym. That was great.
Sounds very good.
Yeah.
I found myself like I just hit 61, and I'm like, now I have a renewed interest in exercise, because I see, you see your peers going off in one direction or the other, the people who kind of manage to hold it together physically and the people that don't. And obviously it's pretty obvious which side you want to be on.
Yeah.
So, okay. And the third song?
Yeah. So the third song is, it's a completely different one. So this is actually something I found in YouTube. So there's a channel by the artist that goes by the handle Gatto Bus. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but Katobas is the name, and the logo seems to be a reference to the Japanese studio Ghibli, who has been making this very famous movies, and
Spirited Away, and
Spirited Away, exactly, and, yes. And Totoro is one of them, and I think that it appears that his logo is coming from the cat bus in Totoro, so that's I think how it comes. And and there's a song called Dreaming that he made, and is, you know, that's available for anybody to look at in YouTube, and it's a song using two synthesizers that he apparently started to play as he had some difficulties getting to sleep. So that was somehow interesting for me, as I also started to kind of play for my own enjoyment music around 5 years ago. And that's when I discovered this song, and I can also relate to the fact that it's hard to get to sleep. So that's the backstory there. Yeah.
So Eric, that was great. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve. It really has been my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Very good. So thank you very much for listening to the whole of this week's episode. I can only imagine that you're among an elite few. And if you've been putting up with a few adverts on the way, then hopefully it'll give you some satisfaction to know that throughout the time that I work at Wiliot, we're giving 100% of the advertising revenue that we receive to a really good cause, the Monarch School for Children of Homeless People. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope it was useful. I'm always learning something. I hope you have too. Lastly, my thanks to Aaron Hammer, who does the editing for this show. And until next time, be safe and be well.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by ACAST and available to all audio platforms.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.